So we've, Baruch Hashem, we've made it to the fourth of our What's the Deal series. And just to review, for those of you who are new, last week we spoke about the concept of Gilgal, which is reincarnation. We tried to establish that this concept of Gilgal, of reincarnation, is part of normative Jewish thinking. It's an accepted idea, even though there were those who questioned it. And we spoke a little bit practically, how it affects our life, what it means to be a Gilgal, right? The reality that most of us probably are souls that have been to planet Earth before, and how that affects us in Avodas Hashem. Tonight, we're going to talk about something that's probably a little bit less relevant and a little bit less prevalent in our day-to-day lives, and that is the concept of golem, right? Of creating a golem. Now, for those of you who thought this would be a practical golem making class, it's not. If you want to leave, that's okay. By the end of this year, you will not know how to make a golem and use it for those things that you desire to do. I'm sure some Jew in Bnei Brak probably wrote some kuntris like Asiyas Golem Kehilchasa, and I could go pick that up in your local bookstore and figure out how to make a golem if that interests you. But we're going to try to talk a little bit just to understand the concept of making a golem and maybe to even draw a few lessons, if we can, practical lessons in Avodas Hashem. So just to define the terminology, right, what is a golem? What does this term mean? What does the word golem literally mean? So the way that it's used in Tanakh and in Chazal, right, again, not necessarily in the context of creating a golem, but the term itself, the term golem means something that's formed in a very basic or primitive or incomplete form. When Adam HaRishon was first created, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took dirt, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took water, and he fashioned Adam out of dirt, before he blew into him in a neshama, essentially you can refer to Adam HaRishon at that point as a golem. Right? So he's an incomplete human being lacking this quality of neshama. And essentially what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was he created this possibility. And we'll talk about how this works. But Hashem created the possibility that certain tzaddikim, who are on very lofty levels, can, so to speak, mimic HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this process, can also create, on some level, incomplete creatures. I don't want to call them humans, because they're not, right? They have man-like properties sometimes. You could also make animal golems, as we'll talk about. But using Kabbalistic knowledge, using the Kalach of Sefer Yetzirah, which is one of the earliest books of Kabbalah, usually attributed to Avraham Avinu, if a person's on a level and they understand these types of things, each person on their own appropriate level, they could create these man-like or animal creatures that we would call a golem. Now, before we get to the facts about what is a golem, right? How do you make a golem? A little bit, we're not going to learn how to make a golem. You could go study Sefer Yetzirah if you feel that you're on an appropriate level and you have good reason to make a golem. But just before we get to the facts about, golemim, right, let's start with some of the fiction. Because I'm sure many people have heard of this rumor, this concept, this idea that the Maharal of Prague created the golem. Right, raise your hand if you've ever heard that the Maharal of Prague. Okay, so a lot of people in the room, most people in the room, have heard this idea that the Maharal of Prague created the golem. So before, again, we get to the facts, and we'll see how interesting, even in Sifrei Halacha, not just Sifrei Kabbalah, Machshava talk about this, but Sifrei Halacha dealt with the question of a golem. Let's just try to dispel some of the fiction. Okay, the Maharal lived in the 1500s. Sometimes we forget that. You think of the Maharal, you read some of his writing, and it seems almost to have a more current language and flavor to it. But the Maharal lived quite a long time ago. And there are many books, many stories, many legends about the Maharal having created the golem. This golem of the Maharal was sent on missions throughout Prague to beat up anti-Semites and people who gave the Jewish community in Prague trouble. This was the role of the golem. There are all sorts of, again, legends and stories that have been written and passed down orally throughout the generations. If you ever had the opportunity to go to Prague, you've been to the Altnoy Shul, which I'm sure some people who've spent the year in Israel, maybe on Heritage or something like that. When I spent my year in Israel, I was Zocha before Pesach. I was Zocha to see some of the destruction of Europe, unfortunately, but also to travel to Prague and see some of the old Bate Knessios, Bate Midrashos that exist there. And I went to the Altnoy Shul, which is one of the, it's called Altnoy, means the old new shul. Why is it called the old new shul? Because in the 1200s, when it was first built, that was like the new shul in Prague. Later, they built another new shul, so they called it the old new shul. So the Altnoy Shul. If you've been to the Altnoy Shul, maybe you've noticed as part of your tour, right, that boarded up staircase leading to the attic. Right, why is it all blocked up? Because apparently, tradition has it that the golem, Maharal's golem, is stationed there in the attic till this very day. And again, it makes for good stories for tour guides, famous rumors and myths about Nazi soldiers in World War II going up to the attic and disappearing, never coming back. Right? This is the myth that exists about the Maharal's golem. And again, I want to start by trying to a little bit to show you some of the facts and dispelling this myth. There's no question. I think something we can all agree on is that the Maharal of Prague was a very great tzaddik and a very great Talmud Chacham. And there's no question his svarim are some of the fundamental svarim of Machshava. He's arguably one of the greatest Baalei Machshava in Jewish history. His impact on Chassidus, right, and much of Sifrei Machshava to this day is very, very, very much felt, whether it's directly or indirectly. But the Maharal of Prague, again, as a Talmud Chacham, as a tzaddik, there's no question he's about as big as anyone could possibly be. Right? He's certainly someone who, I guess we could say, could have made a golem. Certainly he seems like the type of person who was knowledgeable enough and righteous enough. The Bnei Yisachar writes, if you take a look at source number one, Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, the great Bnei Yisachar writes in his writings on Kislev and Teves, HaRav HaGon Maharal Miprag Yadua Dvarav Nemru Beruach HaKodesh. It's known, it's well known, that the Maharal of Prague, his words were stated with Ruach HaKodesh, Vayimishtamish B'Sefer Yetzirah, and he was involved in studying Sifrei Kabbalah. He was involved with Sefer Yetzirah. Again, that doesn't mean that he, no indication that he created the golem, but he was involved in these types of things. Similarly, in Halachic Psak of the Chacham Tzvi in a Tshuva in source number 2, the famous Chacham Tzvi writes about a Tshuva, a question of a Tarnagolas that apparently seemed to not have a heart, and a question of the kashrus of this Tarnagolas. The Maharal of Prague was asked, and he said, the Maharal of Prague was matir this chicken, and the Maharal of Prague is certainly, says the Chacham Tzvi, someone who could be Somech on 100%. When it comes to a psak halacha of the Maharal of Prague, not a question. He concludes his words where it's bolded. Hagon an Yisrael El, the Maharal of Prague, asher shimesh ruach hakodesh kumefursim. Maharal of Prague, who everyone knows had ruach hakodesh, he is someone who we can certainly rely upon. Yes. Okay, so right, so we'll have to do a what's the deal with ruach hakodesh? You know, nevuah. What are the differences between them? You know, do we have Ruach HaKodesh through the study of Torah, which is a different way of coming, right? Chacham Adif Minavi, like the Gemara says, Bava Basra and Ramban describes there. So that's a good question. It's a little bit beyond the scope of what we're talking about tonight, and I'm pretending to know what I'm talking about, and I don't really have a good answer to your question. So we'll have to research that more fully and understand exactly what Ruach HaKodesh is. But for all intents and purposes, what it means is the Maharal of Prague was a very big Jew, right? And he was someone who studied Kabbalah. He was someone who had higher knowledge, and for that reason, again, he could, in theory, be someone who could have made a goal. Right? It's also important to recognize that Prague, in the times of the Maharal, was certainly a center of Kabbalah. Some of the students of the Maharal of Prague are very well-known personalities, very well-known Kabbalists. And again, the Maharal of Prague, there's definitely an indication, beyond the Bnei Yisachar's comment here, that the Maharal of Prague himself was interested and involved in the study of Kabbalah. Now again, none of this indicates whatsoever that the Maharal of Prague actually fashioned the golem, that he used the Sefer Yetzirah to create a golem, and that doesn't in any way take away from the greatness of the Maharal of Prague. I'll show you just a very good line to keep in mind as we set off on this journey. If you look at source number 3, there's a somewhat rare Sefer known as the Zer Zahav. It was written by a grandson, a descendant of the Chacham Tzvi, and he writes the following very cute anecdote, which I think will give us some perspective. Davar nechmad shemati b'zeh mishmei da'agon Rav Meir Arik. He says, I heard a story, a maisa with Rav Meir Arik, one of the great poskim of his time, the Rav of Tarna. He was the author of the Imre Yosher. Shepam achas sholo so balabayis maskil echa. A certain simple Jew came to him and he said, Ma Rabbeinu Omer b'inyan masha omrim shemaharal miprag bar golem ayidei sefer yetzir. What does Rav Meir Arik say about this claim, this apparent claim that the Maharal of Prague created the golem? What do you have to say about that? So Rav Meir Arik responded the following. He says, Gufa inyan. As far as the question, is there such a concept as creating a golem? On harav, sheyacholim livroi they say for yitzir einenu davar chadash. That is an accepted fact. We have well documented stories of golems, and therefore, if you're asking me, is it possible for anyone to have created a golem? The answer is absolutely yes. As far as your specific question, the Maharal of Prague created a golem. Im kein gufa inyan yuchal lios rak sheilas kfodo hu im Maharal hayabar hachi. So apparently, your question is, did the Maharal in fact do such a thing? So he says to him, "Lama le lechvodo lehevi raya min a golem. Why do I need to bring a raya that the Maharal of Prague was a very great Jew from the fact that he made a gola. Halo yachol zos leida min achacha. Instead of proving that the Maharal was great because he made a golem, why don't we look at the Chachamim that the Maharal of Prague made? Look at some of his students. The Tosfos Yom Tov, he says, was the Talmud of the Maharal of Prague. If we have any understanding, says Rav Meir Arik, who the Tosfos Yom Tov was, if you can imagine what the student was, you can only imagine what the Rebbe was. So why do I need to prove whether or not the Maharal made a golem? Look at the Maharal's accomplishments. Look at his Talmidim. Look at his Svarim. Look at his Psak Halacha. And you'll see the Maharal of Prague is certainly a great person. Again, it a little bit skirts our question, did in fact the Maharal of Prague make a golem? So as far as the Maharal's greatness, just to put it out there, right, there's no question the Maharal of Prague was a very, very special and unique Talmud Chacham. But again, getting back to our topic, right, the truth of the matter, did the Maharal of Prague make a golem? So the facts seem to be, from the information that I've gathered, if anyone knows otherwise, I'm happy to hear, right, how did this myth come about? Is there any truth to it? The facts seem to be that the Maharal of Prague, there's really no indication from authentic sources that the Maharal of Prague ever fashioned or created a golem. You look through the writings of his Talmidim, you look through the writings of his relatives, many recorded biographical information about him, people who knew him, people who lived in his time, not one of them says a word about the Maharal creating a golem. Just to give you just a quick synopsis of some of these authorities that I'm alluding to. There was a famous historian by the name of Rav David Gantz. He lived in Prague in the time of the Maharal. He was a Talmud of the Maharal. He wrote a chashuv work called Tzemach David, which has much information about the time, and he doesn't make mention whatsoever of the golem created by the Maharal. The Chida, who lived in the 1700s, right, somewhat after the Maharal, the Chida wrote a book called Shema Gedolim, and he talks about different Gedolim, and he talks about their Svarim, and he praises them, sections praising Gedolim, sections talking about Svarim, right? He makes no mention of the Maharal of Prague having made a golem, despite the fact that under the entry for Eliyahu Baal Shem of Chelm, another great Rav who lived much later than the Maharal, he does talk about the fact that he made a golem. And yet, for the Maharal, there's no mention of this golem. So he's acknowledging that there is a concept, but again, no mention that the Maharal of Prague was involved in such a thing. There was a dayan in Prague named Rav Meir Perelis. Rav Meir was asked by the grandchildren of the Maharal of Prague. He lives about 100 years after. He was asked by the grandchildren of the Maharal of Prague to record a Megillas Yochsin, a genealogical record of the Maharal's family, and to include as much biographical information as they had collected. They had offered this dayan to record such a work. Again, about 100 years after the Maharal's patira. And again, you look through that, all about the Maharal and his family and his life, and not a word about the golem. There was a later edition that appeared close to the year 1900, and all of a sudden there they start sticking in the footnotes, oh, the Maharal had a golem. But again, the early editions, the authentic early editions, have no mention of the Maharal making a golem. And again, many of the historical works throughout history, the Korei Hadoros, the Seder Hadoros, these are all well-known works for those who study these areas of Jewish history. Right? Again, no mention of the golem. You look at the Maharal's gravestone, it doesn't say, this is the famous Maharal who made the famous golem. Again, not a word about it. Let's go back for a moment to the Alt Neuschul. Right, you're standing by that staircase, again, boarded up, and you're hearing these stories from a tour guide about, no one's allowed upstairs. So I want to share with you a very interesting footnote that appeared in the Torah Journal about 15 years ago. There's a popular Torah journal called Yeshurun. I just bought before the summer, the 26th volume. This is from the second volume, 1997, source number 4. And he tells them there, well, let's read together. Amnam Rav Noah Chaim Levine. Apparently, one of these later editions of this Megillas Yochsin, this genealogical book about the Maharal, apparently in that book there's a footnote that tells the following story. Sheshamati mipi agona amiti mafursa marino rav Yosef Shaul Halevi av based in Lemberg. He says, I heard from Yosef Shaul Nathanson, right, the Shaul Umeshiv, very well known volume of Shas and Chuvos, famous Rav, right, Rav in Lemberg. Levav, as it's known in Hebrew. He says that one time, Shapamachas, Beyoso, Bekihila Kedisha, Prague, one time he traveled to Prague, Bikish Lalos, Alios, Besaknesis, Hayeshana, Anikra, Altshu. Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson wanted to go upstairs to see what's really the story, right? What do they actually have upstairs in the attic of the Alt Neuschul? Liros Shamas Golem wanted to see the golem. Vakesher Bala Sulam Aliyah, when he got to the ladder, he's about to go up the steps. Boilav Shamash Besikinesis. Right? Some Jew appeared out of nowhere, right? The Shamash who takes care of the Besikinesis, and Ish Zakin, Vesiperlo, he told him the following. Kiagona Golder of Yecheskel Landau, the Node of Yehuda, one of the great Rav, one of the great Rabbanim of Prague, Kasher pamachas ratz nafshul liros as a golem. One time he too wanted to see the golem. His asik betanios vosva yom. He fasted that day and he went to the mikvah, the tavel, the mikvah tahora, and he put on his talis and tefillin and he went upstairs. And when he came back down, va'achar kol eila olu l'sham, va'kasher yarad amar agon anizkar la'el, the note to Behuda said, ki meharoi shalo la'los ot sham shum adam. No one should go up there. He didn't say what he saw, or what he didn't see, but he said, board it up. No one should be going upstairs. And at that point, when Rav Yosef Shaul Nathanson heard this from the Gabbai of the Altnoy Shul, he decided, I'm not going up there. If the note to Behuda said we shouldn't go up, then we're not going up. However, continues the footnote where it's bolded. Nitzayim says this Rabbi Shlomo Sprecher, who wrote this article in the Yeshurun Journal. He's a professor, he's a doctor as well. He says, I heard, I'll mention, he says, should Dr. Natan Green, of Dr. Natan Green, Besifra Germania Maharal, apparently in the 1800s, he wrote, in the 1880s, he wrote a sefer in German about the Maharal, and he writes the following, Shebishnas Tafresh Mem Gimel, in 1883, Nasu Shiputim Nerchavim Besik Nesas Altnoy Shul. There was major renovations that were done in the Altnoy Shul in the 1800s. Okay, we're talking about 200 years, nearly 300 years after the Maharal. V'chipsu Az Bechorim of Estakim, and they checked every crack, every nook and cranny of the shul. And what did they find, and what didn't they find? Behold, Achadarim, all the rooms. Va'alios, the upper chambers. V'lomatsu af shemetz me'agol. And there was no indication whatsoever, right? Despite this thorough check of the entire building, there was no indication that in fact there was a golem in the building. So again, what lies behind that boarded up door today? Again, should we take the advice of the Nod Behuda to not sneak up there? Either way, you're not getting up there, they're not going to let you up there. But if we were to go up there, would we find anything? Is really unclear. So where did this whole rumor come from? Where did this idea that Maharal in fact had a golem, where did it come from? The first mentions of it appear about 230 years after the Maharal's Patira. Right, there were some Sfarim, a German book written in the 1800s that started to describe stories of the Maharal and the golem. But where did it really get out? How did the word get out that the Maharal famously had a golem? So in the year 1909, a book came out called Niflos HaMaharal, The Wonders of the Maharal. And in this book, its author, who was a Rav, Rav Yehuda Yudel Rosenberg, was a Rav, he wrote other Sfarim. Some are more authentic than others, as you'll see. Right? He wrote this book called Niflos Maharal, and it describes the exploits of the Maharal and his golem, and it tells all these fanciful tales how the Maharal sent the golem on all these different missions. Again, this took place several hundred years after the Maharal passed away. And again, having gone through some of the history here, seeing that there was no indication that any of the Talmidim or people who knew the Maharal or who lived in Prague had said anything about the golem. But this was the book that really popularized the idea. About 15 years later, in 1923, there was a fellow by the name of Chaim Bloch. Now, this Chaim Bloch was also a person who wrote some very legitimate Sfarim and some very, very fake Sfarim. He forged a lot of letters. He had some very authentic letters. And a person who actually has authentic letters, it's easier sometimes to slip in some fake letters. So in 1923, all of a sudden, Chaim Bloch comes up with this letter that he presents to the Jewish community at large. This letter, apparently written by the Maharal himself, describing how to make the golem and why he made the golem. This letter has been analyzed by people much smarter than me. A lot of scholarly research has been done on it, and it's been proven to be a forgery. As has the Niflos Maharal, this book by Rabbi Rosenberg, that was put out about 15 years earlier. Again, I don't want to exhaust our time here with all of this academic research, right, and Torah research, but in the there's a Torah journal also came out in the 1980s called Moriat, printed in Eretz Yisrael. There's a Rav by the name of Avram Benedict. He was the first person who really, in 1985, started to say, wait, we have to like do some serious research here. And he went through and he showed how much of the language that Chaim Bloch used in this letter, this fake letter of the Maharal, was totally inappropriate from the time period of the Maharal, certain expressions that didn't even exist in the time period of the Maharal. He showed how the stories also were not to be believed. And therefore, he very much disproved and got the ball rolling on exposing, I guess, some of these forgeries. But again, essentially what was done was done. And you can't take back once these types of rumors and these books and these, again, they're very fascinating stories, they're interesting stories. It makes for good literature. There are many editions and remakes and, you know, things of that matter. There's even comic books about the Maharal and the Golem that appear today, right? It's hard to undo the damage that was done. Now, just to be fair, this Rav Rosenberg, it could be, and some claim, he never intended for people to take it seriously. He was writing it in a, you know, it was a semi-historical, semi-fictional work that people should enjoy. And some people even claim that he confessed to them, that he told them openly, I never intended for this to be, you know, just to try to be malam eschus on him a little bit, because he was a rav and he was a respected authority. There's a Yiddish sefer called Halalu Avdei Hashem. And in this Yiddish book, it talks about Rav Moshe Aryeh Freund, who was the Rav of the Eid HaCharedis in Yerushalayim, not that long ago. And in there, it tells the following. It says that he had a tradition going back to the Shin of a Rebbe, the son of the Divrei Chaim of Sanz, who heard from Rabbi Rosenberg himself, Rav Yehuda Yudel Rosenberg. He told him himself, he said, I made up the whole thing. I never intended it to be you know, real. And the Shin of a Rebbe said, whenever I see the book Niflos Maharal, it pierces my heart. Because I heard from the author himself. He told me himself that the whole thing was a forgery. That it was never meant to be taken seriously. But again, this is where, you know, why most of you raised your hand when you heard of this idea that the Maharal, in fact, created the Golem. This is where much of the history of it lies. And again, I'm not going to share any more. If anyone's interested, I could point you to some articles. They're all available. But view this, I guess, as the Rosh Prakim, and hopefully it will pique some interest, and we'll want to explore it a little bit more. Okay, so now let's get to some of the golems that may have existed, how exactly it worked, right? Sources in Torah and in Chazal. Let's start with the following question. When Hashem created the world, how did Hashem create the world? It's a pretty broad question. Right? What did Hashem use to create the world? When Hashem Kiviyachol was in his laboratory in Shemayim creating the world, creating everything, every bit of the Bria, what did he use? So he used the Torah, Stakha Baraisa, he used his Dibur, right? Asar Ma'amaros. Right? The Gemara says, and they're both correct what you're saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the osios of the Aleph. So he used the letters of the Torah. Right? Aleph through Taf. That's a Gemara, it's explicit Gemara in Maseches Brachos in source number 5. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. How was Bezalel able to create such magnificent things in the Mishkan? Yodei Bezalel Litzarif Osios Shenivro Ben Shemayim Varetz. Bezalel could create these wondrous things because Bezalel knew how to combine the letters that were used to create heaven and earth. Says Rashi, fascinating Rashi on Shas, Rashi in Gemara Brachos. Says Rashi, source number 6, Al Yedei Tzeirufan Uvesefer Yetzira Tanilu. If you want to learn more about this, how you can use letters to create things, use Kabbalistic names of God to bring things to life, to create things, this is where you would look in the Sefer Yetzirah. Now, I mentioned earlier, Sefer Yetzirah, according to most, was written by Avraham Avinu himself. That's the majority opinion. Others say it was perhaps attributed to Rabbi Akiva, maybe other early Tanaim. But normative thinking says that Sefer Yetzirah was the book that was written by Avraham Avinu, one of the earliest and authentic Kabbalistic Svarim. So presumably, if Avraham wrote Sefer Yetzirah, perhaps, if we look in the Torah, we can find that Avraham, in fact, used Sefer Yetzirah. Do we have any indication of that? And just before we try to prove and investigate if Avraham, in fact, used Sefer Yetzirah, if Avraham ever created a golem, which would be quite a suggestion, I want to just clear the air on one point. And that is, at this point, as we move into people making golem, is it fair to say that this is an appropriate thing to do? I'm not talking about for us. I'm saying in general. The Torah speaks out against the use of kishuf, of performing witchcraft and black magic. Does this fall into that category? So just to clear the air, let's just read one Rashi in source number 7, a Rashi in Sanhedrin. Rashi says that this type of behavior is absolutely permissible for someone who it's appropriate. Again, you have to be a Kabbalist, you have to be a person who's a Torah knowledgeable person, a Yari Shemayim. Right? But Rashi says this is not kishuf. Ve'ein kan mishum machshefos. This is not the type of witchcraft that the Torah prohibits. Why? Demaisa kadosh baruch hu hein. Because essentially what you're doing is you're calling to a kadosh baruch hu. You're using a kadosh baruch hu's Torah to empower you to act in a way that's similar to a kadosh baruch hu. Ayidei shem kedusha shalavu. And you're using Hashem's name, Kabbalistic names of a kadosh baruch hu to do so. So you're using a very holy chachma. Right? This is not, again, from the Sitra Achra, the dark side. This is not witchcraft, it's not kishuf, but it's a very holy type of chachma that, again, was passed down to us by Avraham Avinu himself. Going back to our question, did Avraham Avinu ever create a golem? Any thoughts? Well, according to the Malbim, the answer is absolutely yes. Listen to this. Parshas Vayera, Avraham is visited by his three guests. Right? They show up at Avraham's house, and immediately Avraham Avinu, the great Ish Chesed, Hachnasas Orchem, immediately Avraham's mobilized, he's off and running, and he's preparing for his guests. Let's read the Pesukim in source number 8. Pasuk tells us, Ve'ala Bakar, Ratz Avraham, Avraham runs to the cattle, Ve'ikach ben Bakar, Rach, Ve'tov, Ve'yitin al-anar, Ve'yimaher la'asos, Ve'ikach ha'mavach alav, Ubena Bakar Asher Asav Yitain Lifneiv who made Aleim Tachas Eis Veilchim. Avram and his trusted Nar, right, very busy preparing. Who is this Nar? Presumably it's Yishmael. Right, maybe it's someone else, Eliezer. Right, busy preparing for their guests, chema, chalav, milk, meat, all sorts of things. Says the Malbim, what really happened? He quotes from a chazal, I don't know where this chazal appears, v'yesh l'chazal, sheben abakar rutz milifnei Avram. Avram initially, in Pasuk Zion, goes to the cattle to retrieve an animal. What happens? His finest meat runs away. The animal runs away. V'avram bara achai, they say for Yetzira. What do you do when you're out of meat? If you're Avram Avinu? No problem. Say for your seer, you make me, right? You make a golem animal, and then you serve it to your guests. Shal ze amar v'yemaher la'asososam. Avram was quick to. So normally, you open up an article. Open up an article. Chumash. What will it say? Avram was quick to prepare it, right? But that's not what the pasuk says. Avram was quick to make it. What does it mean to make it? She also saw he say for Yetzira. He created the meat himself out of Sefer Yetzira. Nira Shiratu Lataris Mazeh and says the Malbim. Why do Chazal present such an idea? Again, I don't know where he got this Chazal from, but why do Chazal want to present such a thing? It comes to explain Eichechel Malach and Basar B'Chalav. How can he serve milk and meat to his guests? They're angels. Now, again, there are many who say that Avram Dafka served the milk and meat, and the angels ate milk and meat. And that way, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to get the Torah, and the angels are fighting with him, saying, "Why are you wasting your time, God, giving the Torah to man?" And Moshe says, "Well, does milk and meat apply to you? Because if it did, why are you eating it in Avram's tent?" Right? So there are those who want to say that yes, he fed them milk and meat, and it was really milk and meat. Did he know they were Arabs? Did he know they were angels? Did they really eat it? There's a lot to say on these psukim in and of themselves. But according to the Malbim, this answers the question. You're allowed to eat basar b'chalav if your basar is what? You know, golem meat, right? It's like a tofu burger, right? Marasayin, okay. Other Rebbetzin is giving us halachic problems for the Malvin here. Okay, good. V'amrushaya basar shenever like they say for Yetzira, she'ein lo din basar. Meat created with Sefer Yetzira is not meat. And that's why the pasuk says he went and he took chema v'chalav, he took butter and milk, uben abakar asher asah. In the same sentence, milk and meat, yes, because it's the meat which he created. Okay, this, by the way, would raise a very interesting question for us during the 9 days. You know, we're so busy making siyumim. What if we could make golem meat? Can we barbecue? I'll have to ask Rabbi Hain. Halacha l'maisa. If anyone has the, you know, a lot of injuries, but yeah, again, marasayin issues. Okay, there's what to... A very pressing shaila for this time of year as we're starving to death. Okay? Chas v'shalom. Baruch Hashem, the food is good. Okay, so this is an example. Oh, Max is questioning that. Okay. So get a siyum. So go new. You're in the cold. I'll go finish shas or something. Okay, good. There you go. Fine. So this is the origin of Sefer Yetzira. Avram wrote it and Avram himself used it. Presumably, Avram passed on this Kabbalistic tradition to the next generation, right? To his children, to the grandchildren. It was kept within the family. Eventually, it became, you know, more available to the community at large. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan translated it into English, which is something that many questioned whether or not that was appropriate. But again, this was certainly something that was kept in our tradition. But danger certainly could arise, and danger did arise. While Avram maybe was the founder of this and he knew how to use it properly, in later times it led to quite a bit of controversy. You fast forward to the story of Yosef and the brothers. We spoke about it recently in the Girls BMP. Right, the sinna and the kinna and just the terrible machlokas between Yosef and the brothers. What was it all rooted in? What really catapulted this machlokas into the limelight? So the Torah tells us in source number 10, Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megurei Aviv Eretz Kanaan. Yaakov is settling down. Eila told us Yaakov Yosef Ben Shavas Veishana Hayaroes Achav Batzon Vuhunaris Bnei Bila Vespnei Zilpa Neshe Aviv. Yosef's hanging out with the children of Bila and Zilpa. Vayave Yosef Es Dibasam Ra'al Aviv. But about the other brothers, right? About the children of Leah, Yosef has such some not nice things to share with his father. Says Rashi, what were the not nice things that he shared with his father? Kol Rashi Roa Ba'achtiv Bnei Leah Hayamagid La'aviv. Says Rashi, where it's bolded in source number 11, Shayu Ochlen Aver Menachai. The brothers were eating Aver Menachai. Umezalzim Bnei Ashvachos Lekrosan Avadim. They were making fun of the children of Bila and Zilpa. And lastly, Chashudim Al Arayos. They're hanging out with some non-Jewish women, right, and getting themselves, they're suspect of Gilei Arayos, of adultery, of promiscuity. Says the Shlach Kadosh, I don't understand this whole story. If Yosef is a tzaddik, we know Yosef's a tzaddik, we know the brothers are tzaddikim. But what's going on here? Who's telling the truth? Is Yosef a liar? Are the brothers really involved in these things? Very hard for us to swallow it either way. Says the Shlach Kadosh in Parshas Vayeshev, source number 12. Umak Shemaol, everyone wants to ask, Chalila ich laha min al shiftei kol lasos maisim kela. Could we really believe that Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, they're involved in znus, they're eating Eber min achai, they're really so mean to their brothers, they're bullying their brothers just because they're not from Leah? It's hard for us to imagine. Vim lo asu, and if they didn't do these things, eich laha min al Yosef shiotzi davar shekhem yipival anashim gedolim keilu. How could Yosef go out and spread rumors like this? Either way you slice it, it's not a pretty picture. So jump down to where it's bolded. Vishamati shenimtza bekovetz yashem. I've heard that it's recorded in ancient texts. Again, a little unclear what these ancient texts are. Ha'inyan haya. Avram Avinu asa Sefer Yetzirah Maslo Yitzchak. Avram wrote Sefer Yetzirah, created Sefer Yetzirah, and passed it on to Yitzchak. Yitzchak LeYaakov. Yaakov Masrom Lebanav Asher Heim HaYoter Miuchasim. Yaakov had a lot of children. Who did he pass it to? His best children. Why did he pass it to his most pure, right? Children of the most pure lineage, his greatest children, so to speak. Why? Ki ein mosrin sisrei Torah ke'ila, el litznuyin miyuchse l'Yisrael. Because you don't give away secrets of the Torah to anyone. You don't just open up a Kabbalah center and start teaching Kabbalah to Madonna, right? But Kabbalah is the deepest secrets of the Torah. It has to be guarded. Has to be respected. And therefore, Yaakov passed it on to who? To the children of Leah. And they were to pass it on to each generation. Al-Kain Masru L'Bnei Gvira V'lo B'nei Shvachos. So he passed it on to the children of Leah and Rachel, and not to the children of Bilhah and Zilpah. V'nei Matzinu B'Gemara. Debara Igla Tilta B'chol Erev Shabbos Ayidei Esek Sefer Yetzirah B'tzirah Hashemus. There were those who had the ability, the Gemara tells a story, that some people created meat for Shabbos every week with Sefer Yetzirah. So based on that, says the Shlach Kadosh, you know what happened here? Where it's bolded. Uvavadai zesh anivra al pi Hashemos v'lo mitzara tolda ein tzarech shchita. An animal created with Sefer Yetzirah, not only like the Malam said, can you eat basar v'chalav, but you don't even need to shech the animal. You can bite right into its side if you're interested in that. Right? You can rip a limb right off the animal and eat it without shechting it. V'nita la'ochla v'odochai. You can eat it while it's still alive. V'kach asu ha'shvatim. So the shvatim who had this koach, who had this knowledge of Sefer Yetzirah, they went and they created their own animals, and they were eating what appeared to be Eiver min achai. Well, Yosef doesn't know that. Yosef lo yada v'yasavar shu hanolad me'ava'im. He thought this was a natural animal. Hevidiba zeh alaviv. So he goes to his father and says, the brother's reading Eiver min achai. And the Shlach goes on, he says it was the same thing with everything else. When the Yosef brings reports that the brothers are involved, they're hanging out with these women, these foreign women. Who are these women? The Gemara tells a story that Rava created a man using Sefer Yetzirah, right? And there are shemos of God that are masculine in nature, and there are shemos names of God that are feminine in nature. You can create a female golem. So the brothers were hanging out, very cryptic lashon, either Matayel, again, whether that means they're being physically involved with these golem women, or whether they're just hanging out with them, whatever it was, it didn't look good to Yosef. And Yosef again goes bringing the reports to his father. What about the fact that they're making fun of the children of Bilhah and Zilpah? Because the children of Bilhah and Zilpah know what's going on here. And they say, we want to get in on the action. What do the brothers say? Sorry, this is Kabbalah. It's not for everyone. We can only pass it on to certain people. And therefore, they seem again to be speaking disrespectfully to the B'nai Bilhah and Zilpah. And Yosef again is misled. He's confused. L'shem Shemayim, he goes to Yaakov to try to report against his brothers. And the Shlach Kadosh concludes with a word of Musar. He says, listen, if such a machlokas could take place, if such a sincere and honest mistake could take place amongst the greatest people, all the more so how pathetic it is, how wrong it is when we cause machlokas, when we speak Lashon Hara for no good reason. So you see again, the Sefer Yetzirah tradition was passed on, but as time goes on, it seems that it's appropriate for us to have less involvement with it as opposed to more involvement with it. Okay, I want to look at the Gemara that the Shlach really built his premise off of. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, in source number 13. The Gemara tells the story that Rava created a person. Rava bara Gavra. Some want to suggest, this is not brought in Svarim, but I've heard this from numerous people, that when a magician performs a trick, what does he say? Abracadabra. Right? So some want to say that abracadabra is a similar to Rava bara Gavra. Right? Rava created a man. So that's like the magic thing that you say when you perform a trick. You're gonna, yeah, you have something to say to that? You're gonna, oh, I'm not sure if you're raising your hand. Okay. All right, so either way, that's a side point. Rava, you don't find that in the Rishon. Rava bar Gavra. Rava created a man. Shadre lekamei to Rabbi Zeila. And he sent it to Rabbi Zeila. It's very unclear. I've had a hard time finding the Rishonim why he sent it to Rabbi Zeira. Was this like a practical joke? You know, like a golem shows up at your door, right? You're supposed to kind of like guess, are you real? Are you a golem? Either way, Rabbi sent this golem to Rabbi Zeira. Have a kamishtaiba day. Rabbi Zeira started to talk, right? Like anyone who showed up at his door. Rabbi Zeira started talking to the golem, talking and learning, presumably. V'lo have a kamahadar lay. And the golem had nothing to say back to him. So he realized, why can't this individual speak? Could be it's just a person who's mute. Rabbi Zeira says, no, 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 I know what's going on here. You're not a real person, you're a golem. So Rabbi Zeira turns to it, Amar lay, min chavrai at, you are from my friend, you were created by another person, hadar la'afrech, go back to your dust. And immediately the golem collapsed into a pile of mud, right, on Rabbi Zeira's doorstep. Says Rashi in Source 14, how did Rava create this creature, this golem? Ayidei Sefer Yetzira, Shalamdu Tziruf Oshios, Shel Shem. He was able to use, again, Kabbalistic names of God to create this golem. Why couldn't the golem talk? And now we understand a fundamental principle about how a golem works, what a golem is. Why couldn't the golem talk? Because like we said at the beginning, the concept of a golem is a very incomplete human being. Right? It's an incomplete creation. If we go back to the Before we go back to the beginning of the Torah, let's just look at the Maharsha in Source 15. The Maharsha explains, the fact that the golem couldn't speak was an indication that it was a golem. Lefi, shekoach haneshama shehu adibor lo hayachol livro. Rava could create this Frankenstein, so to speak, but he couldn't put a neshama in it. And our neshama is the thing that gives us the koach adibor. Again, this shouldn't be a chiddush to us. You go back to the beginning of the Torah when Adam HaRishon was being created and getting his neshama. And the Torah tells us that Hashem blew into man, source number 16, end of the line, Bereishis Perek Bet, Vayihi HaAdam LeNefesh Chaya. Hashem made man a living spirit. Says Unkelus very famously, V'havas ba'adam l'ruach memala. Hashem made man a speaking spirit. The thing that defines humanity, the thing that makes us a human and not a golem, is our koach of dibur. And to take it even one step further, Rashi says it's not only our koach of dibur, but it's also our ability to what? To think and to reason. Rashi adds in Source 18, every animal is a nefesh chaya. Af behema v'chaya nikru nefesh chaya. Why is man uniquely referred to as a nefesh chaya? Animals are nefesh chaya. Birds are nefesh chaya. Ach zo shel adam chaya shebekulam. Man is the most alive. He has the most chiyus. In what sense? Shenitosev bo deya v'dibur. Because man has the ability to speak, and man has the ability to think. And that's what sets us apart from a golem. A golem is an imperfect being. It lacks these higher qualities of things that make us human, the quality of a soul, a ruach, a nefesh, a neshama. Right, we'll see exactly what it does have that makes it live as we wrap up the shir. Right, but a golem, again, is lacking in a soul, and therefore it's lacking the ability to speak on its own and the ability to presumably think for itself. When a golem is created, when a golem shows up at your doorstep, like in this Gemara, Rabbi Zera's doorstep, so what status does it have? Again, it's not human, it doesn't have a neshama, right? Well, how should we view it? From a halachic perspective, how do we view the status of a golem? Can a golem be Jewish? If it has a Jewish creator, presumably, does that make it Jewish? It's like a child? How do we view a golem? And again, this has fascinating ramifications in halach. Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi, the Chacham Tzvi, again, we mentioned him earlier, one of the great poskim. The Chacham Tzvi has a remarkable tshuva where he talks halach lemais about a golem. Here's the tshuva. Let's take a look in Source 19. Is a golem like a person? Is a golem Jewish? And more pressingly, the question that he's asking, can a golem be counted in a minyan? Can you imagine such a question was discussed in an authentic Sefer Halacha here? Nistapakti adam anotra idei Sefer Yetzir. Apparently this was a reality, and you'll see why, because his grandfather, as he'll mention in the tshuva, was someone who in fact created a golem. I'm not sure, he says. I have a suffix regarding a person who's created by Sefer Yetzirah. Like the Gemara describes in Sanhedrin, Rava Bar Gavra, V'cheina Idu al Zakeini, and they have a tradition about my grandfather of Eliyahu of Chelm, that he was also someone in more recent times who made a golem. Mi mitzdarif la'asara le'dvarim shetzrichan asara, kigon kadish v'kedusha. Would we count the golem in a minyan for kadish, for kedusha? Mi amrina, and should we say that kevan dechziv v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael lo mitzdarif? He's not part of b'nei Yisrael in the classic sense. So therefore, maybe he should not be allowed to count. O Dilma, came and the Kaimala, the Sanhedrin. Since we have a Gemara in Sanhedrin that tells us, Hamagadl Yasam Besoch Beso, Mala Alava Kasav Kilu Yaldo, if you raise someone in your house, if someone takes an orphan, right, a child, and adopts a child into one's home, it's as if that what? You become their parent. So the more so when I not only raise a golem in my house, but I actually create the golem. So maybe I'm the golem's father, and if I'm a Jew, my golem's a Jew. And maybe the golem should be allowed to count the dominion. It's a very wild suggestion. Hachanami, gave unto Maisi Adam Shal Tzadikim. Since a golem is created by the hands of a tzaddik, Havile Bechlau B'nai Yisrael, Shemaisi Adam Shal Tzadikim, Hein Hein Toldosam. This is the offspring of this tzaddik, the creation of the tzaddik. Right? Oh, Jewish mother. Okay, right, so far we've had all examples of men making these things. We don't know about women making these things yet. Okay, interesting question.
And Zinner still, if you count it as a person, Rabbi Zinner still causes it to last.
Okay, good. How can Rabbi Zinner kill the goal? That's going to be part of the Chacham Svi's response. And why waste the perfectly good tenth man for a minion, right, and turn him back into dust? You can always use the tenth man for a minion. Let your goal be the tenth. Right, let him hold a Sefer Torah or something if you're nervous that he's not, you know, legit enough. V'nir Ali says the Chacham Svi. The cave and the Ashenachan Rabbi Zeira, the Amar Min Chavraya Tuv Lafreich, since Rabbi Zeira turned it back into dust, Haresha Harga. Rabbi Zeira apparently killed the golem. If this golem could have served as a, you stick it in the shul, let it always be around to make that minion when you get stuck with nine. So why would Rabbi Zeira destroy a perfectly good golem? Now, as far as the question of killing the golem, that's not a question. That's not the question here. Why? The Hachi Dayek cried because the pasuk says Shofech Dam Ha'adam Ba'adam Damo Yishafech. If you kill, if you spill the blood of a person, right? Now many Achronim point out there's no drasha like this in Chazal. This is the Chacham Svi making his own drasha here. That golems that don't have blood and they're not called Adam, so you can kill a golem. Okay, that's his own drasha. You don't have such a drasha in Chazal. But anyways, as far as killing the golem, that's not the problem. But if the golem could be used for a minion, so why did he destroy it? And therefore, it seems in his concluding remarks at the end of Source 19. It seems, according to me, says the Chacham Svi, that apparently you can't use a golem for a minion. Okay, now in some editions of the Chacham Svi, there's a note, a ha'ara on the side from his son. Chacham Svi had a son named Rav Avraham Meshulam Zalman Ashkenazi, and in this edition, he says, my father later updated his tshuva. He didn't change his psak, but he added something to bolster his position. Let's take a look very quickly in Source 20. He added the following. B'sefer divrei harav Meshulam, she'ila yud, hevi me'avi v'chacham svi, mikisvi ad kodesh. He brings, the son of the Chacham Svi, brings from his father, from his ksav yad. He says, I want to add something to my tshuva in Simen Tzadi Gimel, what we just read a moment ago. V'ra'isi b'sefer aparte, second line. I saw in the Sefer Apartis, the Kabbalistic work of Rav Moshe Cordovero, in the Shari Chalos, Perek Yud, Acher Shehevi Amaimer de Rav Bar Agavri. He talks a little bit about this concept of creating a golem. And he's Pilpul Behem. He writes the following. Hineha Briyahi Shehi Vitzuras Ha'adam. Yes, it looks like a person. It might look like a human being standing at your doorstep. V'lo Shiyeba Nishama V'lo Nefesh V'lo Ruach Elachius Ba'alma. But it doesn't have a nefesh, it doesn't have a ruach, it doesn't have a nesham, it has no aspect of a human soul, it has a chiyus ba'alma, some type of energy that allows it to move about, but it's not human whatsoever. And again, he concludes his remarks, you can read it at length if you'd like on your own time, but he concludes in the final few words of Source 20, this golem is not at all human, and therefore lafuki hai the lo asi l'klal chiyuv. The golem has no ability to ever become chayiv in mitzvos. Right? It's not human. It has no relation to the Jewish people, and therefore it's totally exempt from the concept of minion and can't be added to a minion. Yes.
The problem is that basically anything that follows some sort of rhythm or follow commands has some sort of nefesh.
So
how are we saying that this thing has no...
Okay, so what exactly it has is a good question. I mean, is it more than an animal or is it less than an animal? Right, an animal might have some type of soul. Again, these things are... It's another what's the deal. You know, what's the deal with the neshama, right? Do animals have souls? Do animals have any type of... Bechira? Yes, Mr. Frager?
I couldn't just answer that it doesn't have a bris.
Doesn't have a bris, okay? Okay, all right, so good. We're The point of these shiurim is to generate thoughts, and I see that we're generating thoughts, so this is good. I'll just mention, since we're at this point of the shiur, there's a sefer called Likutei Chaver Ben Chaim, and he says a wild thing. He says, if you want to suggest, again, the Chacham Tzvi says, I'm stopping, I'm not really sure. At the end, he seems to be more inclined to say it can count in a minion. But the Likutei Chaver Ben Chaim says, if we were to suggest that a creator of a golem, right, that golem that's created is a Jew, so he says, maybe you have to wait 13 years from the time the golem was created before, right, we gotta wait for the golem's bar mitzvah, you make a golem bar mitzvah, or a bat mitzvah if it's a female golem, and then the golem can be joined to things. Again, the Achronim pretty much say that's rather outlandish, and we shouldn't really suggest such a thing. But again, it seems that the Chacham Tzvi was not so inclined to saying a golem should be counted as a minion, or should be counted as a human at all. The Chazon Ish in Source 21, and we'll just read one line from the Chazon Ish, one of the great poskim of the 1950s, obviously one of the greatest gedolim of Eretz Yisrael of the past generation. The Chazon Ish writes in Yaradeya, Shenivra b'tsefer Yetzira, that which is created with Sefer Yetzira, near the Ein Lo Kol Zechuyos Yisrael, it appears very obvious to me that it does not have the status of a Jew. The Karov she'ein lo gam Zechuyos Adam, and I'm pretty sure that it doesn't even count as a person. He quotes the Chacham Tzvi, who is not sure about this. Yes.
I know that an animal doesn't have a neshama, so how is a golem and an animal different?
Okay, so we're using terms very broadly here. You know, what does an animal have is the subject of a lot of discussion. An animal is more alive than a plant, right? What does an animal have that gives it its life force, and how would that relate to a golem? So I'm not really sure. I don't have a definitive answer. We could talk maybe more after this year because it's late and I'm already over time, and I want to really wrap it up. Okay, let's just take a look at the son of the Chacham Tzvi in the Shelas Yaivitz. Shelas Yaivitz has the same question. He says, my father was asked this question about counting a golem and a minion, and he writes much stronger than his father. I don't really think it's much of a question at all. But then he concludes where it's bolded, the last couple of lines, a very interesting historical fact. And again, as I mentioned earlier, as time goes on, we should probably have less involvement with these things, as opposed to more involvement with these things. He writes the following interesting maisa. Agav, in passing, since we're talking about this topic, I'll mention the following. As kirkan mashashamati mipek kadosh, what I heard, a tradition, mashakar ba'oso shenotu ayidei zekeno hagon Rav Eliyahu Baal Shem Zal. What I heard when my great-grandfather, my father's grandfather, Rav Eliyahu Baal Shem of Chelm, when he created his golem, I want to give you the end of the story. What happened with that golem? Maral's golem, was there a golem? Right? Let me tell you what happened with this golem that definitely did exist. Rav Eliyahu Baal Shem saw that his golem was getting out of control. Ki achar shera'u holech v'gadel ma'od nisyare shelo yachriv ha'olam. He was concerned that his golem would lose control of his golem. The golem would destroy the world. Would wreak havoc on New York City. It sounds like a good movie, right? A nice action film. Alkein lahavda. Alkein lakach v'natach v'menu Hashem shayadavak adayin b'mitzvah. The way you bring a golem to life is you attach these names of God to its forehead, right? So my great grandfather went to remove the shemos from the forehead of the golem. And by doing so, he stopped the golem. Baruch Hashem, he saved New York City from the golem. Aval hiziku v'asu bo srita b'panav, b'ochnis asik b'netikos Hashem imenu b'chazaka. But as he was trying to remove the shame from the forehead of the golem took a swipe at him, and he left him with a scratch across his face. I guess for the rest of his life, he had this scar on his face for all to see, showing what happens when, unfortunately, we come into contact with the golem. So therefore, it seems that as time goes on, right, with each passing generation, our involvement with these things becomes more and more dangerous. Which leads us to our final question. If golems have nothing to do with us, if Rav Eliyahu Baal Shem, a great Kabbalist, wrote many Sifrei Kabbalah, we're talking about the great-grandfather of Rav Yaakov Emden, the grandfather of the Chacham Tzvi, if he couldn't control a golem, it seems very obvious to us that we should have no ASIC whatsoever. We should not even pick up Arya Kaplan's English translation of Sefer Yetzirah. It's not for us whatsoever. And therefore, I leave you with the following question. If we want to know how to function as Jews, where do we look? We look in the Shulchan Aruch. If I want to know how to live my life on a daily basis, which section of the Shulchan Aruch do I look in? Orach Chaim. And if I want to understand what the Mechaber and the Ramah are talking about, where do I look? Mishnah Berurah. I'm reading through the Mishnah Berurah. I want to learn how to function. We're talking about Tavshin Ayin Bet. I want to know how to live, right? Tavshin Ayin Beis. I want to function in the world today. And I open up a Mishnah Berurah and I'm learning, a little halacha every day. Halacha Yomis. And I get to the following statement. I'm reading through the Mishnah Berurah's magnum opus. The Mishnah Berurah, the purpose of it is to make halacha clear to us, things that apply to us. And all of a sudden, I come to the following statement in Siman Nun Hey, source 23. Ha'adam anotzu al yedei sefer yetzira, im itztarif l'minyan, u'lechol darash b'kedusha. Ayin b'tshuvas chacham svi, number 93. And he gives us one other relevant source. Why on earth would the Chafetz Chaim, who wrote the Mishnah Berurah in the early 1900s, right? Was it that he was reading Rabbi Rosenberg's Niflos Maharal and he got interested in golems? Why on earth would the Chafetz Chaim include in the Mishnah Berurah a book of practical halacha, right? If you're, by the way, if you have this shaila, right? Look in the Chacham Tzvi, who by the way wasn't even sure what the answer to this question is. Why would the Chafetz Chaim bother to write this in the Mishnah Berurah? This question bothered me for a long time when I first saw this. It's very strange. Why would he write that? Fortunately, Rav Asher Weiss, one of the great Rabbanim of Eretz Yisrael today, Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, records that he found in the writings of the Chafetz Chaim's son, that the Chafetz Chaim's son, who helped him, his children and sons-in-laws, helped him write the Mishnah Berurah, once asked him this very question. Why would you include this halacha as part of the Mishnah Berurah? And I read to you in source 24. Umeod Niflesi Lama Havia Mishnah Berurah Hai Sveka, says Rav Asher Weiss, I don't know why the Mishnah Berurah bothers to mention this. She'ein bo nafka mina lehilchas abidoreinu zeh. It means nothing to us. Who here has the ability to make a golem? We all heard of the golem, but how many? Raise your hand if you think you can make a golem. Okay, good. I didn't think that anyone would raise their hand. Exactly. So why do I need to know this? The son of the Chafetz Chaim wrote the following. Shehikshe zos la'aviv. He asked of his father, "Lama kasav halacha zu? De'ilchas al meshichle." It's totally irrelevant to us. V'lo l'maisa. Ve'yishivu agon. And the Chafetz Chaim, the holy Chafetz Chaim, responded, "I wrote this halacha in my Mishnah Berurah." Chafetz Chaim says, I put this in for one simple reason. Yes, the Mishnah Berurah is primarily a book of halacha, but I also want people to be inspired to see how amazing the Torah is. I want people to realize that A, such a thing could exist, and even in later generations, not only in the times of the Gemara, Rav Bar Agav, but the Chacham Svi and the Yaivitz, Yaakov Emdin, these people were dealing with this halacha l'maisa. Again, maybe in the 1900s, maybe in the year 2000 and beyond, it's an irrelevant question for us, halacha l'maisa. But it's very inspiring, and it will strengthen our emunah. And I think this lesson alone justifies our entire share. Maybe our entire series. So what's the deal series? Right? To learn about these deeper areas of Torah, if it strengthens our emunah, to learn about the Man, and to learn about Gilgul, and to learn about golems and Shadim, to learn about these things, if it just wakes us up to the reality that there's more than meets the eye in the life of a Jew, whether we see these with our natural eye or not, if it adds a drop to our Muna, then these Shurim, and especially tonight's Shur, is time well spent. And I'll add one final lesson that we can take away from the Golem. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos describes the concept of a Golem in a very different setting. Mishnah says, Shiva Dvarim Begolem, Vishiva Bechacha. There are seven signs of a Golem, and seven signs of a person who's wise. A chacham is one who's not eino medaber b'fnei mishu galum menu b'chacham. A chacham doesn't speak in front of a person who knows more than him. Ve'eino nichnas l'toch divrei chaver. A chacham doesn't cut someone off when in the middle of speaking. Ve'eino nival l'hashiv. He's not quick to respond if he doesn't know the answer. Shaul ke'ininu meshiv ka'alacha. He asks appropriately and responds appropriately, etc., etc., etc. All of these midos of a person who knows how to speak and knows how to listen, is sensitive, is thoughtful, concludes the Mishnah of the Chilufein b'golem. And a golem is just the opposite. A golem, the way the Chazal are using it in this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, is a person of sorts who's not thoughtful. Right? A human being, right? Or a true human being, who's not a thoughtful person, who's not a sensitive person, who's someone who's not living the way that Jewish people are supposed to live. And when we don't act like Chachamim, if we don't live in accordance with these principles, that the Torah wants us to live with, then we negate our very essence. We're not using our thoughts, we're not using our speech. And then we're like the golem that's lacking its ability to think and the ability to speak. And I think this goes back again to what we started with. When Meir Arik was asked, did the Maharal ever make a golem? And he said it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter if the Maharal made a golem out of dirt, because the Maharal made a Tosfos Yom Tov. The Maharal made Talmidim who knew how to think and knew how to speak and knew how to act like Jews. Rav Futner used to quip. Rav Futner said, everyone talks about the Maharal's golem. Rav Futner says, come to my yeshiva. You'll see how many golems I made. Right, some of my Talmidim didn't turn out as good as I would have liked. But I think if we take the message to heart, if we try to respond to the challenge again in a way that's relevant to us, if it inspires us in Amunah just to know about this concept, halavai, it should be a good thing. But all the more so if we respond to this challenge, especially this time of year, to be thoughtful human beings, to be sensitive human beings, and to use our speech and to use our minds in the proper way, Amir Tashem will be a little bit more like a Jew, a little bit less like a Golem, and will be zochah to bring the Geula Shleima b'karov. Thank you very much.